The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1096. It's Tuesday, the 19th of June, 2018. By the way, download the app. It's free but priceless. voxmarkets.co.uk/app. And then what you do is search for a company you want to follow or you have an investment in, and then hit that follow button on that page of that company, and you'll receive significant news from that company whenever they release it, within seconds. And it's free of charge, and you can set up multiple watch lists. So that's voxmarkets.co.uk/app. Okay, on today's podcast, I have Lawrence Reed, Executive Director, and Miles Campion, Executive and Technical Director of Europa Metals. Previously Ferrum Crescent, it's now Europa Metals, EUZ is ticker, and they discuss the start of the scoping study on their lead, zinc and silver project located in Spain. Also on the podcast, Sachin Oza and Stephen Williams, co-CEOs of Rehobold Resources, RBD, discuss their recent US acquisition and other European projects. Plus, I have Dennis Thomas, CEO of Phoenix Global Mining, PGM, and Dennis talks about the start of the feasibility study at their Empire Copper Mine and also their step-out drilling program. And Malky, normally on a Monday, but is on a Tuesday today, of course, talks about the following stocks: SDX Energy, Cabot Energy, President Energy, Diversified Gas and Oil, Eco Energy, Petromatad, Rehobold Resources, and Block Oil. That's BLOE, brand newly listed. I chatted to the guys on the podcast last week. Plus, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Lawrence Reed, Executive Director, and Miles Campion, Executive Director and Technical Director of Europa Metals. EUZ is a ticker, guys. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, Justin. How are you doing?
Good.
Good morning, Justin. How are you doing?
Morning, Miles. Morning, Lawrence. It's the first time we've sort of chatted, and called you Europa Metals outright after the general meeting, because, of course, we knew you were changing from Ferrum Crescent into Europa Metals, but now you are fully fledged and you've started the work program you said you're going to do, and we'll go into that in a bit. But for people not aware of Europa Metals or vaguely aware of Ferrum Crescent, Lawrence, can you give a brief summary as to what you're all about, please?
Essentially, we're developing metals assets which have grade and scale in Europe. And the reason for that is because we like supply chain transparency. We think Europe removes a large amount of political risk, although you have to go through obviously processes and structures. It's not plain sailing, but in a sense, things having to be done properly is the right way to go. And we think there's a huge amount of opportunity in Europe, but then not to generalise, we think Spain specifically, and for the time being the province of Castile and Leon, who have been hugely supportive of what we're doing. Flagship asset is the Trial asset. Miles and the team commissioned the maiden, or compiled with an independent resource auditor consultants, the maiden JORC resource in January of this year. Lead, zinc and silver. Lead, zinc's flying at the moment. Silver's doing extremely well. Our asset stacks up on a like-on-like basis with many assets around the world with much, much higher market capitalizations. And the reason for that is we've been a turnaround story. So we were Ferrum Crescent. We don't have any ferrum, brackets iron, anymore. And we're not in South Africa. We're European based, operating in Spain with lead, zinc and silver. And we raised money subject to shareholder approval. We put it to shareholders a couple of months ago. And now we're on a pretty exciting workflow. But I think I'm going to hand that over to Miles.
Yeah. Well, let's go into it. So today, you announced the scoping study commencement, so on the project in Spain. Like you said, it's in a decent jurisdiction, removes a lot of risk, and it's very friendly to mining there. So, Miles, obviously we don't want to be on the podcast for an hour and a half, but for people not aware of what a scoping study is, can you start at the basics and essentially tell us what this is going to do?
Yeah, thanks, Justin. It's going to give us many outcomes. yeah, the deposit itself, as Lawrence said, we did our first JORC resource back in January, which was to get all the information we had into a single point and get a resource out, which we said we were going to do, which we did. And then we said we're going to move into a scoping study to look at basically the preliminary economics of the deposit. So to get to that point of what the NPV will look like on the project, we've got to run through several things. We've got to look at basically what the mine is, how it's going to be mined. So what sort of mining method? We'll have a few options on that. Where we're going to put the facilities, the processing plant, all those sorts of things. Yeah, part of that mining method will be a decline or a shaft, most likely be a decline. So all of those things are going to go in. It's going to be the first look at Toral with those factors over it. And that will give us sort of three defined outcomes, if you like. It will give us a CapEx, capital expenditure, and how much it's going to cost to get the project into production. It's going to give us an OPEX, operational expenditure, sort of how much it's going to cost per pound or per ton of ore. All those things flowing into a nice cash flow model, which will give us a net present value on the project at the end. So that's the sort of the main inputs and the output that we want. But there's a lot more work which we'll be putting in there as well. Obviously, we'll be looking at the environmentals, the hydro, the geotech, all those sorts of things. So it's a very good study to do, which will highlight some of the areas we need to work on. It'll highlight some of the areas that we've covered and give us a really good, what I want sort of geologically to come out of that is a very good targeting tool to then take us from that scoping study, moving into feasibility and giving us the areas we need to drill to get our resource from inferred to indicated. So there's many, many things to go in and a lot of outcomes to come out of it. But the main thing being CapEx, OPEX and an NPV. That's what we're looking at, those economics on the project.
Yeah. Is it fair to say that even though you, I assume you think this is going to be a commercially viable model, this is the official first stamping of that and an outlining of it to show to yourself and to others that this here, what you have, what you believe here, is going to be economically very, compelling. Is that true?
Yeah, that's true, exactly. And the exciting thing in this is when we did the resource, it's a big resource, 16 million tonnes at 7%, but within that resource there is a high-grade zone, and that's what came out of our JORC resource. And that's exciting. And it's how you utilise that high-grade resource in a mining operation. And that's the sort of the big thing I'm looking for in the scoping study is how we're going to attack that high grade area. We've got to optimize the resource to make a mine plan around that high grade, but also utilize the rest of the ore body as well. So that's what's exciting about this is the really good core of the deposit that is a higher grade than the inferred resource says. So that's where this optimization comes in. And we'll start giving us some numbers at the end of that scoping study, and then that define our work to go forward to sort of increase or prove up that resource into a reserve.
Yeah.
So that should give us some numbers from that.
And that's expected to end Q4 this year. So it's not far off. I'm not a sort of mining expert on it, but Addison Mining Services, you've been employed to do this. Scoping study, and I've seen their name around quite a lot, so I assume they're a decent outfit, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, there's several reasons for bringing on Addison. Yes, they're a decent outfit. They've got some good associates with them. Julian's very good mining engineer, has been around a very long time, worked on many projects, but also there's the continuity as well. The resource Addison did for us was a good resource, got it up from sort of a lot of 80s drilling into where we are now. So that continuity is very good. And they understand the geology and the resource and the deposit.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And so there's a lot of work. And so you've got the scoping study going. Anything else going on, Lawrence, between now and the end of the year?
No, absolutely. I might just touch on one thing. Yes, absolutely, Addison compiled the JORC resource, and we were very happy with their work, but there was a competitive tender process. We looked at a series of options, and they came out as the best. And that's very much the approach we're taking at the moment, is everything's to competitive tender. We're trying to pick the right people for the long term, and being very cost effective as well. So hope you don't mind, but I just thought I'd add that in.
Yeah.
And on that, we're reaching the end of drilling tender process. And I think that's going to be quite interesting when we announce that. And but you're going to have to wait for that. Again, Miles and the team will be putting some real thought behind that, about how we drill. I think that's going to be an interesting announcement. Mm-hmm. And really what you're going to see is after that. So there's three prongs. There's the PEA, which we think will be announced easily in Q4 of this year, which will give the economics and all the things Miles just has talked about. You'll see extension drilling to the east being carried out from the middle of the year onwards after we've appointed the drilling contractor. And what that will do is give us an idea of the continuity of the resource. We're not looking to add tons and tons and tons and tons, but what we're looking for is, if you look at that large high-grade contained centre that's already been defined, we just want to get an idea of what might be going along to the eastern part of the licence area. And indeed, the shape of the licence area suits us very well. So you're going to see that, and also you're going to see MetWork in terms of, again, looking at costs, but also looking at final products. But again, all of these things, they're going to be feeding back into each other. So we're just trying to organise research analysts coming out to site, hopefully in a couple of weeks' time. And I might also say we probably won't announce anything around it, but we'll update. But Miles is holding, and I'll be there as well, a session in a couple of weeks' time with the entire new team down at that huge core shed, core complex down in Andalusia. And I think that's going to be really interesting. So Addison will be there. Everybody who's just been appointed will be there, as well as our pre-existing team, to really plan out in detail how we're going to do this, what are the processes we're going to put in place, what's the new software we're going to be using. So a lot of detail stuff, Justin, but a lot that's going to be going on.
Yeah, as far as exploration is concerned, you said to the east is open for a bit. I mean, we all know exploration is risky, but how confident are you in the shape or direction of that sort of, like you say, high-grade ore body then?
I might just quickly say, go and have a look at the block model, and I think that gives a very interesting idea. But sorry, over to you, Miles.
Yeah, the extension is not looking for the high grade area is right in the middle of the deposit as we currently know it. What we're looking for the extension is to follow the structure. We've got indications that the structure continues to the east. And as you said, Justin, exploration is exploration. So the idea of that is to confirm the existence of that structure. To the east, we've got round about another 2.5 km of extension of possibility. So we're going to drill to see if we can follow that and see if it's there. That's the whole point of exploration.
Yeah, yeah. So anyone listening right now is not, aware of the technicals of exploration and mining, and they're looking at the company from a valuation point of view. I mean, you are like 3 million. You've got you raise a gross million pound to develop this asset. Now, what you're doing here is supposed to unlock value, isn't it? So, but how would you point to people like that, saying, well, if everyone comes on here pretty much on the podcast, say they're undervalued, but what would you point to prove that you are undervalued then?
The scoping study. Mm-hmm. The scoping study will give us those numbers that I think people are looking for to sort of verify our resource. We verified the resource, but in terms of verify the value going forward. And we do sit as a peer group, we sit at the base, even though we've got a deposit which is probably 3-4 times both the size and the metal content of anyone above us. So, to prove that value, that's why we're doing a scoping study.
Yeah, that's good.
And again, one of the things we'll be doing in the research is getting an independent research analyst to build up a peer group. Because, of course, we can't talk about a peer group because we're ASX listed, but that's something that's going to be coming.
Okay, all right, marvel stuff. And, well, listen, there's one final thing to do, and I'll leave it up to whoever wants to do it. But if someone's listening right now and likes the sound of this, but are not yet following the story, give us three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Oh, I'd say because in a sense, it's not necessarily exploration. You've already got 40,000 metres plus of drilling. You've got a maiden jolt resource in 2012. And you're about to have a scoping study to define economics where the management team's going to be going out and talking to people about what they think is an extremely exciting asset in a lead zinc environment, which needs an awful lot of supply. And the share price is still what it is today. That's for me, that's it. And it's first world as well.
Yeah,
in Spain.
Yeah, absolutely. And just one final thing. Are you minded about this, or are you just, you know, obviously proving up this asset with a thought on mining it, or are you looking at partners, to bite off you?
We've got a number of options. We are not restricted by we have to sell it. You know, there's, but we're not going to go to, I mean, Mars, do you want to add to that? I mean, I don't want to go too far in terms of.
No, we're open to options. I mean, the good thing about the asset is it's very amenable to mining. So we're going to do all the work towards that point in time.
Marvelous stuff, guys. Good to chat to you. And like I say, you've got a busy sort of work program on between now and the end of the year. So no doubt we'll be chatting again in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Fantastic. Thanks for your time, Justin. Take
care, mate. The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Sachin Oza and Stephen Williams, co-CEOs of Rehoboth Resources. RBD is the ticker there. Guys, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
I know there's a lot of interest in the story. I've seen it on social media. I've had people request you come on, so it's nice you come on. So it's good to chat about the story. For people, we'll go into some news in a bit. But for people not aware of the company, not familiar with Rehoboth Resources, could one of you guys give a brief summary as to what you're all about, please?
Yeah, certainly. So Rehoboth Resources is an investor in pre-cash flow projects in the upstream oil and gas space. And we specifically focus on the pre-cash flow side of upstream oil and gas because that's where the most significant market dislocation has been in terms of the value of the underlying asset and the entry price at which you can come in. The big difficulty that investors have had in this space is realizing that value in terms of share price performance, even if the quality of a pre-cash flow asset is particularly strong. So we've laid out a very clear strategy to close the gap between the value of the project and the underlying very low price that Rehoboth can come into it by carrying out by making sure the following things happen. The first of that is that when Rehoboth invests in a pre-cash flow project, the capital that Rehoboth provides will facilitate near-term drilling activity on that asset. The second and very important point about that asset is that it also has to have a very clear and visible line to monetization after drilling success. Therefore, the capital that Rehoboth provides does not get tied up for a long periods of time, and we can see how value realization will ultimately translate into share price performance. And finally, what we are talking about in terms of pre-cash flow assets are assets with low technical risk. And this is the case often because substantial amounts of capital have already been spent on the project, de-risking them to the point that Rehoboth can come in and really create value in that last final step of technical de-risking.
I understand. And at the moment, just to get into perspective, we're going to cover the Gaelic acquisition at the moment. But before we do that, pre that, you had, what, four investments, is that right?
We've executed two transactions, which are investments into Corallian Energy and Danube Petroleum. Mm-hmm. The exciting thing there, though, is that's actually given us access to an anticipated four wells in the relatively near term. So that's two UK wells within the Corallian portfolio and a two-well appraisal campaign in Romania via the Danube Petroleum investment.
Understand. Okay. Well, let's go into the acquisition of Gaelic Resources, which you announced on the 14th of June.
Take us through the detail here and significance and why you like this.
Yeah, so the acquisition of Gaelic Resources has given us exposure to a series of new assets in California, in the Sacramento Basin in California in the USA. We can earn up to a 50% interest in each of those assets by drilling up to 5 wells, and we anticipate drilling 3 of those this year. We've made the acquisition with shares rather than cash, which is a key part of our strategy. Our observation of the industry is that the industry is essentially short of capital, and so we believe it's far more efficient for our cash that we raised in our fundraise earlier this year to go into the drilling of wells, not into the acquisition of assets. Now, the assets themselves fit right in the middle of the sweet spot of the Riebold strategy. We're buying pre-cash flow assets, which means we're able to get in at an extremely low entry price. But whilst they're pre-cash flow, they are very much de-risked. These are in areas that have previously produced hydrocarbons. They have lots of additional seismic data over them, and therefore we're extremely confident that the cash we spend on drilling will turn into positive results in terms of upcoming production. We've also got extremely low drilling costs associated with these assets, so our capital is sufficient to get us right the way through the drilling of several wells and get them right the way onto production, so we will start to see revenue from these from the cash spent in these assets. The economics are extremely strong, and we're looking at a very rapid time frame to monetization. In terms of timing, you know, workover activity on the existing well stock will start immediately. In fact, it's already underway as we speak. And as I mentioned, we'll be drilling the first 3 wells this year.
Okay, that sounds good. The first 3 wells this year. And also, apart from this, is there any other big sort of milestones happening at Riebold?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've spent a number of months since we joined Riebold back in October last year putting together a portfolio of high-impact, exciting near-term drilling opportunities. And those drilling opportunities are just coming to fruition right now. So in addition to the 3 wells that we expect to see in California this year, we also expect to see 2 wells in the UK. So that's the Coulter well and the Wick well that are both operated by our partner Corallian. And we should see the first of the Danube Petroleum wells in Romania also this year. So in the next 6 months, we will see 6 high-impact, really transformational from a Riebold perspective, drilling events all occurring pretty much one after the other.
And I don't know if it's possible to answer this, but do you have sort of best and sort of mid-case and worst-case scenarios of evaluation of these, you know, if they come out successful, these wells?
It's probably a little complex to go through well by well at the moment. We have published an expected NPV by project, which you can see on our company presentation on the website. I think what's more important as a general message here, though, is that relative to the market cap of Riebold today, success in any one of these 6 wells is transformational in terms of valuation versus our current market valuation. And as we've been at pains to point out, whilst these are pre-cash flow drilling opportunities, amongst the pre-cash flow space, they are considerably de-risked.
Mm-hmm. Okay, excellent stuff. But like I said, you have uploaded a new presentation, and people can see that on the side there. And I can see, I'll tease people, you can see what the NPV is on the site there, but it's on the second page or third page of the presentation. Are you still active? Are you always looking for new projects?
Yeah, you know, we've got a considerable list of projects that we are deeply involved with right now. You know, really what we do and what we have done over a number of years is constantly scour the market in a very dynamic fashion for additional investment opportunities. It's very important that you're constantly on top of the evolution of all of these opportunities. And then when the time is right, you're able to move forward and capitalize on them. So the short answer is yes, we are looking at a number of additional opportunities right now. Some of them are considerably progressed, and we still have sufficient capital available from our fundraise earlier this year to do more stuff.
Marvelous stuff. Okay, guys, so anyone's listening to like the sound of this and they're not yet following you, give them 3 quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Yeah, sure, no problem. So, I mean, Steve, we've pretty much gone through the reasons, but to summarise them, as Steve had said, what we've put together in the portfolio of Rehobald is a very exciting drilling campaign of up to 6 wells this year. Any success in any one of those will be transformational to Rehobald as a company and to its shareholders. So that's the first thing. The second thing is we do have a very strong and supportive shareholder base with a strong institutional following supporting us given the strategy that we're deploying and indeed given our backgrounds to try and extract value out of this industry. And the third thing is the point that you just mentioned, is that success is not just based on the portfolio we have at the moment. We have continued to scour sets of opportunities and strongly believe we can continue to roll this strategy out, exploiting the opportunity that exists and translating that into significant returns for Rehobald shareholders.
Excellent, guys. Good to chat to you. And like I say, you've got a lot going on, so hopefully we can catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dennis Thomas, CEO of Phoenix Global Mining. PGM is the ticker there. Dennis, thanks for joining me again.
My pleasure, Justin. Nice to hear your voice again.
Yeah, yours too. And every time we chat, you are developing that project there in America, in the Empire Mine, and also now at the Horseshoe Block there. So we'll get into that news in a bit. Before we do, Dennis, for people not familiar with the company or brand new to the podcast, give them a summary as to what the Phoenix Global Mining is all about, please.
Yes, indeed. Phoenix Global Mining, we're a North American-focused base and precious metals explorer and developer. As you've alluded to there, we have near-term copper production with significant exploration upside on a brownfield historical mine site at the Empire Mine in Mackay in central Idaho. We're developing at the moment an open pit in the oxide portion of a skarn ore body. We also have significant potential major sulfide mineralization underground in the primary sulfides beneath the open pit. We've also be shortly commencing an exploration program on two groups of claims in the Idaho Cobalt Belt, where we'll be looking for cobalt and copper in the proven area of the Idaho Cobalt Belt. And also, we recently acquired an option on 80% of a very nice-looking, indeed, shear-hosted gold prospect 70 miles north of Yellowknife in the Northwest Territories called the Gordon Lake Project, which is in an area of considerable historic mining of large high-grade gold mines. 59 historical holes into four zones of 17 zones that are potentially there.
Yeah, so a lot going on, but your focus and your flagship here is the Empire Mine, and you're taking it into feasibility study, but you're also going to use the drill rigs for something else. So take us through what's happening here, Dennis.
Yes, indeed, Justin. As of June the 1st, we started a pretty ambitious drilling program. We completed our PEA, Preliminary Economic Assessment, at the end of April. And as you know, in a previous interview, we completed a successful fundraise. In fact, we were oversubscribed of £3 million, which enabled us to kick off the BFS program. As part of that, on June the 1st, the drill started turning at the Empire Mine. Basically, we have now, in fact, we have two drills that started working on the 1st of June. We have a further three rigs, which I think arrive on site today, and they'll be commencing a program of reverse circulation and diamond drilling, core drilling, with AK Drilling of Butte in Montana. And basically, we'll be drilling about 40,000 feet program, part of which we'll be looking at to increase the open pit resource, in other words, moving our inferred ore category into the measured and indicated as part of the BFS program. These are infill drilling to supplement, if you like, where there are gaps presently in our ore reserves. And additionally, we'll be doing some core drilling for metallurgical samples and geotechnical samples as part of the open pit stability data. We'll be doing hydrological testing But importantly, we'll also be doing step-out drilling. Mm-hmm. The infill drilling basically we'll use as part of the BFS for the open pit, which we expect to be published in Q2 of 2019. And there will be 15,000 feet of... Sorry, I beg your pardon, 25,000 feet of infill drilling. We'll have about 15,000 feet for the step-out drilling and the other drilling. And the step-out drilling, in fact, will be to the sides of the existing open pit and also up into the horseshoe block, which we acquired relatively recently. This is the extension, the northern extension of the Empire Mine ore body. So this will be the maiden drill program on the horseshoe block, which is the extension. And so we'll be looking, if you like, to expand the Empire ore body. And it's heading towards the horseshoe mine. And it's worth noting that, in fact, that when the mine, it's the most recent mine, in fact, that closed down there in 1979, and the grades of copper that they were getting were 3.8% copper, and there was also 12% zinc in the last shipment. So it's a significant move, if you like, to expand the Empire ore body.
Yeah, and people often say, so you know, when they're getting those kind of grades there, why did they shut it down? Was it just the price of copper at the time, or what has changed there?
Small tonnage, price of copper at the time, yes. And basically, I mean, mining operations, it's all about tons and grade and economics and unit cost. And it was small, very small tonnage. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, the labor costs, I rather suspect, were far too high. And it just was not economic, even at those high grades.
Yeah, okay. So so what's the next bit of news here, Dex? You said the results and the BFS will be in Q2, and before that, will you be publishing some results from drills?
Well, of course, yeah. Now, the beauty of the program that we've got now, this program's intended to go through to October, and the turnaround on drill sample results are probably in the region of about 5 weeks. So we, with 40,000 feet of drilling, we're going to have a lot of results coming back, and we'll have a steady stream now of drill results right the way through till around about that time, October, November. Mm-hmm. So expect the story to be unfolding as we go through the summer.
Yeah, yeah. And you just mentioned before we came on, you just went to one of those one-to-one marketing, mining sort of conferences in New York. And what's the general feeling towards copper? It's quite bullish, I assume, is it?
Oh, yes, yeah. New York, certainly as far as we were concerned, was a great success. If you like, when I say the roots of the company, the basis of what we do, of course, is in North America, and the US especially. It's worth pointing out that the support we're getting in Idaho is exceptional. The governor of Idaho, Butch Otter, in fact, he did a roadshow very recently in Toronto and New York, and made it his avowed intention to make Idaho the number one mining destination in the USA. So much so that, in fact, he's established a new Office of Energy and Mineral Resources actually in Boise, in the governor's office. And that's specifically to oversee the speedy implementation of permitting for projects. And it's made an enormous difference. You've got a twin stream permitting process now, where you do state and federal permitting in parallel rather than in series. So it has sped things up considerably. So, yeah, the reception there and the fact that we're working in the United States, dare I use the word, the Trump effect, mm-hmm. has been particularly positive, putting America back to work. We've got a lot of encouragement, and also the sentiment for people, if you like, to buy our shares, by us moving to New York, you know, and getting an OTC listing, or a Toronto Stock Exchange listing. As I said, the good people of Mackey see the rigs literally coming through the town, and they want to buy shares, and you know, that came out. Also, there was a lot of very positive sentiment with regard to our capital requirements. In other words, when we come to fund the mine, we already have several offers of finance on the table, from that conference. So, if you like, as far as we're concerned going forward, it was nothing but positive, and we shall be back there having further talks, no doubt, in the very near future.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, Dennis, if someone's listening to this right now and likes the sound of this but are not following the story as yet, give us three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, I always think about this, Justin, and this particular time, I mean, I'm always told not to say it because every CEO or chairman of a company thinks it, but I do believe our perceived value we're undervalued, basically, in my opinion, considerably. I think the trip to New York showed that. We have the Empire Mine, the Open Pit Project, and I think we're perceived basically as just that. We don't get any account for what we've done over the last year, in my opinion. As far as we've acquired two groups of cobalt claims, and we've got the Canadian gold asset, and we've also got a potential gem in the underground sulfide of the Empire deposit. So I just think, number one, we're undervalued. I think we're excellent value if anybody wants to have a punt, for want of a better word. Secondly, we're in the right metals as well, cobalt and copper. We also have tungsten in the deeper sulfides at Empire. So I think we're in the right commodities. And again, I stress we're back in an excellent jurisdiction. With all the encouragement coming from the particularly the state government and the federal authorities, so I think we're in the right place as well.
Marvelous stuff. Well, listen, Dennis, you got a busy drill program going on, so hopefully we'll be catching up in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Malky, Oil and Gas Sector Authority. You're right, Malky.
I'm very well, thank you. And yourself, Justin?
Yeah, not too bad. Just before we hit that big red record button there, you said it's OPEC week. So what's the news around this, Malky?
Well, you know, it's OPEC week. OPEC meeting is scheduled for Friday and Saturday. Normally they would expect to try and complete a meeting in one day. But, of course, nowadays they've got all the hangers-on from non-OPEC, in particular Russia. And they've got a slightly more difficult decision to make because, you know, although it's a nice decision to have to make, the oil price got up to $80 a few weeks ago, they've got to decide, for a number of reasons, what their production is going to be. The last few days, the oil price has come down to sort of 64 and 73 for West Texas and Brent, respectively. And those prices are down because the market is just got a feeling that the OPEC meeting is going to increase production dramatically to make up for a number of things, but to also accept the fact that there's been much lower production from Venezuela, there is going to be lower production from Iran, and in the last few days we've also had some quite serious difficulties in Libya. So actually, my feeling is that there shouldn't be very much downside at all, even if they announce the fact that they're going to increase production a bit. There's still more demand than supply at the moment. So I think it's the market having a bit of a wobble. And then you've got the situation where one or two of the countries, and we're talking about Iran specifically here and Iraq to a certain extent, where the last thing they want to do is to have any increase in production at all, partly because they can't increase production and partly because they want the prices higher, not lower. So, you know, it's all a sort of very careful sort of scales of justice and of production and demand. But actually, in terms of what they can do, they can't increase production by significantly enough to make the oil price come down very much at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know, I did watch the opening game, or bits of it, of the World Cup. It's funny seeing Putin sitting next to there with one of the main guys from Saudi Arabia. I wonder if they're chatting about oil, because they must have something to say about it, you know. And I just wondered if that thrashing by Russia would put Putin in a good mood.
Well, you know? I mean, they were certainly chatting about oil, because the bloke you were talking about is nicknamed MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, who is the crown prince of Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
And the other guy you couldn't see, obviously, the Russian oil minister and the Saudi oil minister were there as well.
Okay.
So there's no doubt that they had significant discussions.
Yeah.
I don't think it would have helped that Russia did them 5-0, but in the end, the Saudis are more important than anyone else because they're the ones that can either increase production or turn the taps off if they wanted to. So,
yeah.
I mean, Russia producing nearly 11 million barrels a day, which is just under their, just around their amount, their allowance. But they can't produce much more. So, to be honest, you have to remember where the wheels of power really are in this organisation.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So, what companies are you looking at, Mikey, today?
Well, I'm looking at a number of companies, some slightly different, some and for various different reasons. But obviously, after SDX Energy, yet again, has announced another gas discovery. This is South Dussuk in Egypt, where they've had an extremely good result, 89 feet of natural gas pay. And the pay was significantly thicker at this well than the original SD1X well, which was a discovery well for the prospect.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is extremely good news. The bottom line is that they'll now be able to get in plans for production from South Dussuk and Ibn Yunus. They'll be producing by the year end. And the company described the wells as having significant potential. I couldn't disagree. I think it's fantastic. They've had 7 out of 9 successes in Morocco, 3 out of 4 in Egypt with 1 to go. They've also announced the testing of one of their previous wells, LMS-1, this morning. Flow rates were down slightly on that one, but that was because of formation damage from the kit that they used, but no problem at all. I think that there's onwards and upwards and further successes from SDX Energy.
Yeah. Paul was on the podcast yesterday, and he did say this. You know, that LMS-1 it's a problem, but it's a temporary problem. Will be sorted. It's more than annoyance, more than anything. But this is the reservoir's there. We know it's there, but it's just sorting out that problem. So it's a temporary thing. They'll go back and sort that out. You know. So
indeed.
Yeah. Cool. Anything else, Mike?
Oh yeah, lots more. But I'll race through it for you. This is really quite disturbing. We're talking about Cabot Energy here.
Mm-hmm.
And Cabot Energy has been through the mill in the last few years. It used to be called Northern Petroleum.
Yeah.
But the new CEO, well, they're not new anymore, but the CEO, Keith Bush, CFO, Nick Morgan, have been what looks like summarily sacked this morning. Both have been removed from the board. And the thing is, they've got a company called High Power Petroleum, who own 57.8% of the stock, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly what's happened here is that, this is mainly operational in Canada, and with High Power Petroleum, you know, doing a lot of work with them. To me, it looks like, and I know there's no way I'm going to get any conversation with a company today, but to me, it just looks like, you know, a good old-fashioned boardroom coup where the main company have said, right, I mean, Cabot have developed quite a substantial acreage. It was their idea to get into this one. High Power came on later on. And because they've got such a big stake, they've just been able to take over this company for next to nothing. This company had a small warning about a month ago because they needed to stop their production in the summer while they established all their winter production levels and so on. And it's a significant credit to Cabot Energy, and in particular Keith Bush and Nick Morgan, where they the company wasn't really given a hard time by the market because, you know, the market have been of the view that since they took over Northern Petroleum, they've taken out a huge amount of cost. They've developed this Canadian resource base and were kicking on very nicely indeed. And the asset base in Canada, in my view, was good enough that the market didn't give them the panic when they had a slight warning about a month ago. They've got a series of assets in Italy as well, which inevitably are going to take a long time. But no, this is a pretty shoddy and unpleasant sign of what happens if you get a major shareholder who comes in and decides they just want to take you out. Yeah. Residual shareholders will be mighty upset about this. Yeah. They've got a very good reason to be upset about it. And questions should be asked in the House, Justin.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, it's funny how things are. I mean, you know, private investors, I'm like myself, we're, you know, I've never been involved in a board or anything like that, and I don't understand how it works. I don't understand if you're a major shareholder, you wield a lot of power, but it just seems, you know, it's you know, the interest of private shareholders doesn't play into this at all. You know, it's like whether it's a good thing or bad thing for the company, it's almost like we don't know, and we're left in the dark a little bit. But it does seem like it's a very almost ham-fisted way of dealing with the company.
It's, it's an absolute disgrace, and I hope that I mean, because you know, High Power Petroleum is not a UK company. Nothing will be said about it. But, you know, and people will say, you know, when you've got a company that owns 57% of the company, then that's fair enough. They can do what they like. Yeah. Well, I disagree. And I think that it's a perfect example of retail shareholders, and not just retail. There may well be institutions in there as well. They can do very little about it. And it's absolutely disgraceful behavior by this company.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay. Yeah. It's shady dealings there in the board. Let's go on to the next stock, Malik. What are you looking at?
Okay. Well, much better news here. President Energy has announced this morning that they have done the workovers they've been working on at the acquisition they made from Chevron at a place called Puerto Flores. And this announcement today is literally only at Puerto Flores and only in the oil. They've got gas as well. What they've seen here is that they've completed the three workovers they were doing, and the wells are back on production and on a significantly increased production, which is even better than they expected. Production is now over 2,000 barrels a day, 2,100 barrels a day, 50% higher than what it was before the acquisition. At the time of the interims, the full year figures, they were producing 1,800 barrels a day, so that's significantly up on that. Means that they've got more cash coming in. The oil price in Argentina is still very high, and they've got increased their future workovers in this area on its own from 7 to 8. They will be doing two workovers on the Estancia Vieja gas field, which does have liquids as well, I think. You know, this, the bottom line is that the economics of this deal, which they did from Chevron, have transformed President Energy, and it didn't need that much transforming already. It's very well run by Peter Levine. In these markets, with oil price very high, they'll be throwing off a huge amount of cash. He's always said, you know, he wants oil production bringing cash at high margins, and these are enormously high margins. And President Energy is still below the 10p placing price from the end of last year, which is absolutely a disgrace. I mean, they should be significantly higher than this, and in due course, someone will work it out, and the shares will go a lot higher.
So, ticker this, PPC, is it?
PPC.
I was just stuck with it. Marvellous stuff. Anything else, Mark?
Okay, quick one. I noticed that Diversified Gas and Oil, which we talked about a little while ago, made another huge acquisition last week. $575 million. Gives them 11,000 wells to well over 32,000 barrels a day. And 230 odd million of gas reserve of reserves. This company buys, you know, these big things with a load of wells, I say 11,000 wells, all producing tiddly pop amounts of oil, but it makes it worth the while. The shares were suspended because it's deemed to be a reverse takeover, so we need to know quite a lot more about it. Funnily enough, the company didn't get in touch on Thursday or Friday last week at all, so I'm pretty much in the dark still about what's going on here. It could easily be a really fantastic deal. I'm looking forward to speaking to the company at some stage, and I will report back after that.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous stuff.
Cool. So moving on quickly to Echo Energy.
Yeah.
They had a couple of announcements last week, a number actually. Mm-hmm. They spudded the EMS 1001 well, which is the third out of the four campaign wells. This is in Fracción C in Argentina. I'm expecting that to be potentially very good news as well. But more importantly, after they've done the work on the workovers of Fracción D, which was a three-well workover program that they did before the Fracción C work, it looks very encouraging. So the fourth well in this program is moving away from Fracción C and going back to Fracción D, where they hope to discover more gas and have accelerate their their gas development program, which would be magnificent for this company because, you know, they only bought a package of assets a while ago. They started with the straightforward stuff, the workover, which has been highly successful. They're on the drilling campaign, which has been also successful. And this is before you get onto any of the other work where they're starting the seismic later on in the year. So I think that Echo are in very good nick at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a very popular
briefly,
stock.
Elsewhere, where there were more deals last week, Petromitad, mm-hmm. Which is quite an interesting play. They did another raise, 18.3 million. Apparently very highly oversubscribed, placing at 10p.
Yeah.
They did, if my memory serves, that was quite a big discount, no? 17 or 18%.
Yeah, a lot of people were on Twitter and all that saying, "What? We're not happy with that, holders."
To be honest, I mean, I met with a company a few weeks ago and I was actually pretty impressed by Mike Buck, the CEO. Mm-hmm. But I didn't get the impression that he either needed to or should have another raise quite so quickly after the first one. And although the price has gone up, it's, you know, people often be accused because the price goes up and they've got quite a big portfolio of stuff to drill, they take the advantage to raise money at a higher price than they did before, which is why you were right in saying that the retail investors were not happy at all. Mm. I haven't been, funnily enough, offered another meeting with the company yet, so I'm sure I will meet him. He's a very nice guy, but didn't go down very well. And leaves it all to do. You know, you've got to, if you go and raise even more money,
yeah,
you better come in with these wells or not at all.
Yeah, exactly.
And a couple of quick ones. Riebold Resources, you know, I mentioned this before, they made an acquisition of Gaelic Resources for all shares last week. This is in the US. They're going to get five wells for 50% of the leases. These things drill really quickly. I mean, days and they're finished. Payback is very quick indeed. It preserves Riebold's cash. It could give them quite a decent cash coming out of the wells in the States, and in addition to what you call near-term value. And I think that Riebold look very exciting on the back of this. I noticed they were speaking the other day at the Capital Oil Conference. Mm-hmm. And I met with Block Oil. We talked about them last week.
Yeah.
Very small starter, but they're keen to grow fast. They've got a lot of wells to drill, but they've got to because they're only producing 20 barrels a day at the moment. But they've got decent backers. They've raised the money more than they expected, I think 5 million. And it brings to mind that Georgia is becoming quite an exciting place. And you will remember that we've talked before about Frontier Resources, mm-hmm. Which are already doing extremely well in Georgia. So, there you go. That's a sort of quick run through what's been going on. Good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah, exactly. I had guys from Block on their IPO date, and yeah, you're right. They seem very confident in where of that. They're good jurisdiction by the sounds of it, but we'll see. Well, you never know in this day and age, but where it goes, the share price. Who can tell? That's half the fun, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Marvellous, Malky. Thanks for that. We'll speak next week.
Okay, look forward to it. Thanks, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Powerhouse Energy, PHE. Good RNS out from them, actually. I love the tech of that company. If they can get that commercialised, who knows where it can go. But essentially, they take waste that nobody wants and from it generate clean energy, which everyone wants. So that's PHE, Powerhouse Energy. At four, SDX Energy. Of course, Malky talked about them and Paul's on the podcast from the company yesterday. At three, Vesarion.
Neil was on the podcast yesterday with another news announcement, VRS, at 2, Andalas Energy and Power ADL. And number 1, straight in, hot footing it in the number 1 position, it's Foot Asylum, ticker Foot. And that's because they're their final results out, and I'm assuming they didn't go as well as expected, but they're down 50% today, and I think they were down a bit more than that, but people are obviously playing the bounce here. Dead cat bounce they're playing. Okay. 5 most popular RNSs are as follows. At 5, Upland Resources, publication of prospectus. At 4, Thor Mining, letter to shareholders. At 3, Mayen Energy, Zinc Ranch Field Development Programme. At 2, Strategic Minerals, MT Weld and Hans Cam Project Exploration Update. And number 1, most liked RNS over the last 24 hours, came from Powerhouse Energy Group, PHE. Powerhouse connects to Microgrid. All right, hopefully we'll get Keith on the podcast very soon. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz, discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.